Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
The more moral outrageous language you use, the more inflammatory language, contemptuous language, the more indignation you use, the more it will get shared. So we are being rewarded for being division entrepreneurs. The better you are at innovating a new way to be divisive, we will pay you in more likes, followers, and retweets.
Well, I hadn't noticed that at all. People trying to be contentious and outrageous in social media online.
And getting more attention thereby. 60 Minutes with an interesting feature indeed on the topic of why social media has poisoned so much discourse in the country. And they talked to Jonathan Haidt, who's one of my intellectual heroes. He's the guy who wrote that fantastic piece, Why the Last 10 Years of American Life Have Been Uniquely Stupid, that I shared with you at length at one point when Jack was ailing or something like that. It's worth seeking out. It's absolutely terrific.
It's probably in one of my many rehab stays.
That could be. That could be. So the voice you just heard was Tristan Harris, who is behind the documentary The Social Dilemma, which I have praised lavishly, and I ought to rewatch. And if you haven't watched it, you should watch it, too. But I will let him speak for himself. Go ahead with the next clip, Michael.
Each individual term referring to your political outgroup increased the odds of that post being retweeted or reshared by 67%.
Your outgroup being opponents, people on the other side.
Yeah, exactly.
These platforms, are they not just reflecting who we are and what we think and the divisions that are already there?
They're supercharging 100 or 1,000 times to one the worst parts of ourselves.
Well, and I would guess the worst people among us, too, or at least the most angry, divisive. There's no way I'm reaching out and saying, hey, you're a nice guy. We disagree. Let's talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, that tone is practically gone from discourse. I
hadn't noticed that either.
Go on. Next clip, Michael.
Here's an example from the day the Department of Justice released a photo showing classified documents in former President Donald Trump's Florida home. A tweet highlighting a straight news story on the subject received about 2,000 likes. But a tweet from a Republican congresswoman calling Trump's opponents dumbasses was liked 10 times as much. And a tweet from the left labeling Donald Trump a traitor was liked 20 times more.
There you go. That's all you need to know, really.
Between the dumbasses and the traitors. I mean, come on.
Yes, yes, Michael.
You know what? That goes back to what I've told you before. People don't want to be informed. They want to be entertained.
You're right. You're right. You're right. People would rather be entertained than informed. Or they definitely want their information to come with an entertainment flair. A bland right. headline of this happened, could be this, could be that, will take months to find out, is not going to get clicks.
Well, and then you compare the appeal of being informed and thinking, that's interesting. Those are the facts, as opposed to righteous indignation. You get to feel like we're right, they're wrong, and I'm pissed about it. People love that feeling.
And so they were talking about likes there, I guess, if you like a tweet. But in terms of sharing information, if you hang around with other people who think the same as you politically, you can't be sharing with them bland things. That's not going to be good for your social standing. You got to be sharing with them extraordinarily exciting things.
How about the aforementioned Jonathan Haidt, who's a professor at NYU, and his last quote is something. I mean, I'm surprised he still functions at NYU, but he addresses that. But let's start with 23 there, Michael.
We are tribal creatures who love to do us versus them, and we're now learning to coexist with a technology that tries to force that down our throat, that tries to make us angry all the time. These changes in the technology that made everything much more viral and explosive, it's as though it gave everybody a dart gun. It's like it gave everybody the ability to complain, attack, criticize anyone at any time in a very short space with no need for evidence, no accountability.
I never miss 60 Minutes. I've hardly missed a single 60 Minutes since I was like 10 years old. But I didn't watch last night's yet because I couldn't get it to load for some reason on my phone. But I want to see, do they get to any solutions for any of this? That's what I wonder. Or is this just, and did they end the segment with, and that's what will end humanity? Anyway, coming up next, a profile with Peyton Manning.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know about Peyton Manning, but we're doomed is essentially the answer. No, it's not. There is an answer. And I will reveal it.
Ending the internet.
In a moment or two. Well, kind of, sort of, yeah. Has to do with a bold experiment going on at a school in the Northeast. Tell you about that in a minute. More with the great Jonathan Haidt. Oh, you know, I'm sorry, before you start that clip, he's talking about everybody has a dart gun. That was one of the main themes of his essay that I read to everybody, and that we shoot criticism at each other constantly, and that shaped discourse. But I don't want to steal his thunder. Go ahead, next clip.
It's about 7 or 8% on each side.
That's it?
Yeah, that's right.
So the extremes have been handed the power to dominate, even though they are fewer in number.
That's right. Exactly.
Roll on.
It's what I call structural stupidity. That is, you have very smart people, highly educated, highly intelligent, but you put them in a situation in which dissent is punished severely, and what happens? They go silent. Hmm. And when the moderates or when anyone is afraid to question the dominant view, the organization, the institution gets stupid.
So his main point there is that the dart guns everybody has been handed are used very, very often to shoot at people on our side, on our end of things, if they show any sign that they might be straying from the doctrine or disloyal or willing to say, you know, they do have a good point on this. Then the darts really, really come out.
Wow, the policing your own side is as intense as attacking the other side. That's certainly true.
Right, and hence the structural stupidity. One more clip from Haidt.
As a professor, what do you do?
I just avoid controversial topics.
Really?
Yes.
Isn't that what college is for?
It used to be.
Yeah.
How about that?
You got no choice. You wade into that, you won't last a week. You won't keep your job a week, you wade into controversial topics, I gotta believe.
Yeah, but then you sue and get a bunch of money eventually.
Oh.
I've read a couple of cases like that. But, yeah, I just wish more. I mean, that guy, he's so smart. He's so right. He's got a great platform. He's got a million people like me who and us like admire him a great deal. The fact that he can't summon up the courage to really go at the evildoers is really discouraging to me.
I know there's no way to do this But if you could just lop off the most extreme, like 5% of Twitter, I wonder how different it would look.
That would be an interesting experiment to see play out.
Yeah.
Or whether the nature of the beast would make new people extreme?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't actually know.
The rules of the game just encourage that so much, it's tough to avoid the temptation. There's a great study out. I'm going to give you the very, very, very short version of it. Outside of school, America's teens average 70 hours per week glued to screens. 70 hours per week outside of school.
So TikTok came up the other day, because we were talking about TikTok last week and how what the average person watches 80 minutes a day. I've never watched a minute. So, you know, somebody's making up, picking up a lot of slack for those of us who don't ever use TikTok. And you mentioned how young people are more or less constantly on TikTok. Mm-hmm. So I asked my son about that, the seventh grader. And he said, oh, yeah. He said the kids that have smartphones, he said, that's all they do. He said, that's all they do. I thought, wow, that's really interesting. He said, we're not allowed to do it in class, but like as soon as there's a break, like lunch hour or as soon as school's over, everybody runs outside and it's all TikTok.
Wow. Staring at their phones instead of each other. Yeah. Yeah. So again, the average kid spends 70 hours a week. That's 10 hours a day. That's the average.
Whoa.
Now, this school in Massachusetts, it's a smallish private high school. It's always prided itself on a close-knit community where family-style meals are eaten at round tables, students and teachers share in chores, et cetera, et cetera. But as smartphones became ubiquitous, faculty members say that sense of community eroded quickly. Students often looked down at screens during meals, even in class where phones were prohibited. Teachers grew tired of being gadget police. Kids retreated to the rooms after class to scroll and text rather than gathering in student lounges. And when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, it even got worse, et cetera. You can picture this. It's sad. It's the modern era. I think it's sick. But the head guy realized something needed to be done late last year after a student live streamed a physical altercation. Watched on social media by many students, the fight became the talk of the school. So this guy and the other administrators began discussing a ban. And many students thought the school wouldn't actually go through with it. Stripping phones from teens was unrealistic, but it happened. This fall, students were not permitted to have smartphones on campus, and teachers agreed not to use them. Instead, they would all receive minimalist light phones for essential communication. The announcement resulted in chaos. Everyone was crying. Kids were yelling at us. Parent feedback was really mixed.
Crying.
Right. Right. Still, and what time is it? Yeah, we probably ought to summarize this. The kids are loving it. The school is surveying students and teachers throughout the year to assess how the smartphone ban is going. In the first installment conducted in September, students said the ban hasn't been as bad as they feared. Teachers said students are more engaged in class. They can still have tablets and smartphones under smartwatches under certain circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. But they interview kid after kid talking about, you know, at first it was weird, but they love it. I'm a lot happier being on social media less, says one young woman, 17 years old. I think I've been a lot more self-aware. Will I ever go back to having a phone with me all the time? I don't know, but I hope not.
You will, unfortunately. But, yeah, it's interesting that that's almost universal, that reaction, whether it's kids or adults, whenever your devices are taken from you, that how refreshing it is and how much you like it. It's almost universal.
Yes, it is. And you know what's interesting about this and some of the quotes from the kids, and it is slightly ironic, is how many people say, I feel so much more connected to people now that I'm not connected to social media or the internet.
Which you're doing, you're telling yourself to be connected to people.
I'm telling you, it's candy instead of a square meal. And I wish I could convince humanity of it, because I think it's doing us terrible damage, especially our young people.
Armstrong and Getty. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
Point of personal privilege.
Don't get brazen with me.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
What is sleep divorce? Well, this is the name for it is not appropriate, I don't think, because divorce is horrible, but this is can be fine depending on your situation. Sleep divorce is if a couple decides to sleep in separate beds or separate rooms due to differences in sleep patterns, habits, or preferences.
Yeah, call it sleep separation,
which I guess is can be a whole bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of you snores, or one of you likes a different temperature, or one of you insists there be a dog in the bed, and the other one says, I ain't sleeping with a dog, or whatever it is. But obviously, you don't want a divorce, so you sleep in separate beds in the same room, or different rooms, or whatever. Sleep divorce. They claim here it's a growing trend. I have no idea if it is or not.
Yeah, I wonder. And then occasionally you convene for reindeer games or what have you.
Some so-called expert, who probably would be little to no help if you actually needed any help, says sleep divorce can actually have a positive impact on a relationship if the couple discusses the specifics of how it can help. Like, it's easier for me to text my boyfriend, she says, if you're not in the same bed. That wouldn't help.
That's a bad for instance.
That wouldn't help. But if my snoring bothers you, you could sleep better. That would help.
When you sleep in the other room, I forget how much I hate you.
That probably is not it either.
So it's a positive.
You also need to discuss how long you intend to maintain this arrangement and alternate ways of establishing connection and intimacy outside of sharing a bed. So I guess you go with Tuesdays at 8. I'll see you right here. Sound good? You're better mine, I guess.
Yeah, boy. That whole thing. And it evolves through life.
What a whole thing. You talking about sex? Or
it's very direct.
That whole thing.
I have more of a Victorian attitude toward that sort of thing. I prefer more delicate terms.
In your world, it's just that they kiss, and then the camera goes fuzzy, and then it's the next morning.
Occasionally, you fade in on the fireplace. That's fine, too. Right, exactly. You know, is it the whole, you say, hey, a little later, maybe we should let the people think, or do you go with a shoulder rub, and or do you make an appointment? It's I don't know. Different people, different things work for different people.
I said 8 o'clock. You're late. It's 8:05. Get out.
I appreciate punctuality. Not tonight for you, dear.
There was heavy traffic near the bathroom area.
when you're 22, it's like, listen. Always, all the time, every second of every single day, assume yes. Actually, that hasn't changed much on one side of the equation.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, same assumption, dear.
Yes, exactly.
I tell you what, if I'm bleeding a lot, give me 5 minutes. Other than that, it's a yes.
Right. You mentioning the fireplace reminded me, Tesla has this thing where the romantic setting. Have we talked about this? Have you heard this?
You turn on
the fireplace, and the big screen turns into a fireplace, and the heater comes on, so it feels like the fireplace on. And then Elon has a mixtape, basically, that automatically plays, and it's all, you know, sexy music.
Wow.
So you turn on the fireplace, you got a roaring fireplace right there in your car with the sexy music playing.
And is there some button that you press to have the seats kind of fold down and flattish or something? Because...
What a funny thing to do.
You know, this is probably over some sort of line, but I remember as a kid, as a teenager, growing up with references to romantic couplings in a car. Again, much more Victorian than Jack over here with his S-E-X word. And then as I moved into the part of my life where that sort of thing became conceivable, I quickly realized logistically this is very challenging. Unless you have, you know what the difference is? If you're writing a song in the 1960s, you're sitting in a, you know, Chevy Malibu that's about 35 feet long.
Right. Yeah.
And it has a back seat that you could, you know, house a family of four in.
Back seat practically is bed sized. Yeah.
Right. And here I am going out on dates in my parents' Plymouth Horizon, if you remember those, which was on its best day, a crappy car and very small. And it was like, two squirrels couldn't do it in here.
I was reading, I don't remember why this article was there, but I was reading the other day about what a crisis that was when automobiles became a thing and people had them and young people could go out on dates on them and how horrifying it was for parents, which, yeah, all of a sudden there's a mobile bedroom your young girl and her boyfriend are headed out in, which had never happened before.
Mm.
Now all of a sudden there's a mobile bedroom. They could go park anywhere. Yeah, that's a change. That's an overnight change in the whole thing.
I'll bet it was.
Armstrong and Getty.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
Shooting an ass over depression.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Jack and I have both made reference to Elliot Ackerman's fabulous book. I took it in via audio. Did you as well, Jack?
I think you have to take it in through audio because the author, who served in Afghanistan and Iraq and a lot of different places, reads the book, and I think that adds a lot to it. Mm. I think this should be required for all voting age adults in America and every high school. That's how much I think of this book.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant and terrific and very readable / listenable. Again, it's The Fifth Act. Find it wherever audiobooks are distributed. And I agree that the author reading it is great. So interestingly enough, in the last chapter, he talks about a couple of different issues that are definitely related to the Afghanistan thing, but more about the current state of American politics and American life. And by the end of this book, you will agree he has earned the right to discuss these things. Abe Lincoln once said, it's one of my favorite quotes of his from his Lyceum address, "If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide. I hope I am over wary, but if I am not, there is, even now, something of ill omen amongst us." His point being, the things that make America great, make us so great, we will not be defeated from outside unless we kill ourselves, obviously. And just as one more aside before we get into some of what Elliot Ackerman had to say, Jack and I are embarked on this naive and idiotic quest to help the country stay together as opposed to profiting from it being torn apart. And there's a lot in politics and in talk radio, in media, that is all about profiting as much as possible while pouring gasoline on the fires. Now, that's not to say all disagreement or strong rhetoric is out of line. It's not. I mean, if you believe something strongly, you ought to express it strongly. But the whole our greatest enemies are our fellow Americans thing, that is unhealthy. So let's start with some of what Elliot Ackerman said so eloquently. Michael, just give us 8081 back to back.
The politicization of American life is swiftly becoming total.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Total.
Can you stop it? I knew there was something else I meant to say. I ought to write this stuff down because I have the memory of a 130-year-old. He had just gotten through discussing all-out warfare, which was mostly a development of the 20th century, really, your world wars, and Eisenhower warning us about the military-industrial complex in an era of all-out warfare. Okay, back to 1881.
The politicization of American life is swiftly becoming total, with virtually no opinion or thought existing outside the realm of partisan sorting. In 1939, when America was emerging from the throes of the Great Depression, our military ranked 19th largest in the world, standing behind Portugal. The Second World War and the Cold War that followed epitomized what theorists call total war, in which every facet of a society is mobilized. This was a departure from centuries past, when nations typically waged limited war, relying on professional armies instead of the widespread enlistment of its citizenry and means of national production. One consequence of total war is that even non-military parts of society become military targets. Manufacturing, agriculture, energy, even civilian populations. By the time Eisenhower delivered his address, total war had reached its zenith. As the development of civilization-ending nuclear weapons had made the human race's continued existence contingent on a precarious doctrine of mutually assured destruction between the United States and the Soviet Union.
Any comment, or shall we plunge on? I think we all understand total war. Every facet of the society is involved.
Yeah, which is what China's trying to pull off right now.
Right, and you can see it in Ukraine, too. Putin attacking everything from energy to food to, yeah, apartment buildings and kindergartens. All right, roll on, Michael.
One way to measure our current state of total politics is to look at the ballooning economics of presidential campaigns.
Listen to this.
In the 1980 presidential election, spending by Republicans and Democrats combined totaled $60 million, $190 million when adjusted for inflation. In 2020, filings showed that the election cost $14.4 billion, which represents a 75 times increase in spending.
We're now spending 75 times as much on our presidential elections.
I can't imagine anybody that would argue that that's a good development, that we've gone from spending $200 million for a presidential election to however many billion that was?
Yeah, from 190 million to 14.4 billion.
Is there anybody of any political stripe or ideology that could argue that that's a good thing? I can't imagine what your argument would be.
Yeah, I'm tempted to go off on one of my usual screeds about how that is just such manifest proof that the government now has way too much power, way too much money, and why we're obsessed with the president in particular as a godhead that will lead us to salvation. But anyway, so again, his point, his greater point is coming. The fact that we're now like total war in a state of total politics. Roll on, Mike.
While the military-industrial complex fed off the U.S.-Soviet Cold War conflict, the political-industrial complex feeds off the left-right conflict. If the military-industrial complex led us into a paradigm of perpetual wars with little hope of victory and no end in sight, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, then the political-industrial complex has led us into a paradigm of perpetual campaigns in which our political class needs divisive issues to fight over more than it needs solutions to the issues themselves. Crucial issues like gun control, immigration, and healthcare.
Well, that's why I've been so hesitant to get into the conversation among the political class, to what extent we are in that, I don't know. But the political class who months ago would be saying, we're now just 15 weeks from the election, and just the that being the only star out there for us to point our eyes toward for anything that is of interest at all in our lives. When is the next election? Where are things right now in the polls for the next election? And they'll start that again the day after this coming election.
Right. Agreed. Completely. Go ahead, play the next clip, then I'll make a point, Michael.
Our passions are being inflamed and manipulated for profit by a political industrial complex that feeds off our basest fears of one another. Our experiment in democracy has worked when it appeals to the best in us, as opposed to the worst. Eisenhower recognized this, and it was the instinct he appealed to in each of us as he closed his farewell address. Down the long lane of history, yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be, instead, a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. And if we do become a community of dreadful fear and hate,
That was an odd place to edit it. Why don't we go ahead and finish it with the last clip?
In the Cold War, failure meant mutually assured destruction through nuclear war. It was an outcome that, fortunately, never arrived, though it's instructive that Eisenhower's farewell address came a little less than 2 years before the Cuban Missile Crisis, the closest humanity has ever come to nuclear annihilation. Today, we sit on a different sort of precipice. Are we entering an era where we hold elections in a nation so hopelessly divided that neither side is willing to accept defeat?
Yes.
In a democracy, that is the truest form of mutually assured destruction.
Yes, that last thing you described, that is what we're headed for. We're screaming toward, and I don't think there's any arresting it.
You know, I appreciate him putting such a beautiful label on something we've been talking about for a very long time, the political industrial complex that profits off of left-right conflict, therefore must keep it stoked at every moment.
And in a state of perpetual election, which everybody has recognized is the current state, without a doubt.
Right. You know, what to do about it on our show is something Jack and I discuss a fair amount, but in greater society, and again, this is a naive and idiotic quest that we're on, but, you know, what the hell. I'm reminded of one of my favorite quotes from Aldous Huxley, who said, and I've mentioned this quote several times in the context of the woke crowd, the critical theory crowd, the Black Lives Matter, defund the police crowd, who are so cruel and vicious. They end careers over the slightest misstep. Literally. Drive people into despair and poverty because they used a word that was okay last year, but not this year. They're vicious. Here's the Huxley quote. The surest way to work up a crusade in favor of some good cause is to promise people they will have a chance of maltreating someone, to be able to destroy with good conscience, to be able to behave badly and call your bad behavior righteous indignation. That is the height of psychological luxury, the most delicious of moral treats.
I love this topic, but I would point out that the book is an awful lot of battle scenes from Afghanistan and Iraq and what the wars were like. But I couldn't recommend this book more highly. I honestly mean I think you will be a better voter and citizen for the rest of your life if you read that book. I particularly think you should listen to it.
Yeah, it covers a lot of ground from the politics of war to the actual fighting of war to the moral culpability of warriors and the guilt of survivors, and just it covers a tremendous amount of ground. It's incredibly insightful. You learn a lot about Afghanistan, but again, this segment is not a book review. It's to discuss, you know, what we've been discussing, and it's okay to be strongly partisan, but I would urge you all to be aware of when you're being manipulated, not informed or just legitimately, you know, well, informed by the political industrial complex, but when you're being manipulated.
Armstrong and Getty.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty. I got my sexy pants on. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
So I came across this in the Wall Street Journal. It certainly struck a chord with me. Short, temporary instances of forgetfulness are increasing, researchers say. The sort of thing that often are called senior moments among people over, I don't know what age. But they're happening to more of us at more ages, experts say. People finding it difficult to recall simple things like the names of friends, coworkers we haven't seen, words that should come easily, how to perform routine acts that once seemed like second nature. We're all struggling with this right now, and they believe it's because all the amount of change that has gone on in the last couple of years, all the change that has happened at a speed that has never happened in human history, consumes cognitive energy, often much more than we think, neuroscientists say. It's no wonder we can't remember a lot of things that we used to be able to remember. Our minds.
Anyway.
Well, that's just plain old. Our minds are struggling with transition moments. Our brains are like computers with so many tabs open right now. That's a good way to look at it.
That is, yeah.
I have way more tabs open in my brain than I did 10 years ago. And certainly more than I had 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, other than, like, different clothing styles or music. I mean, between 1980 and 88, there weren't you didn't have to, like, rethink the world over and over again.
Oh, God, not even close. Hardly
the way
anything.
You interact with the world, specifically. Maybe you had to learn to use a VCR machine.
By today's standards, the difference between 1975 and 1990 was practically nothing. Our brains are like computers with so many tabs open right now. The chronic and cumulative stress of the past years has taken its toll. Research led by these various doctors they mentioned here show that people who have experienced life stressors have impaired memory. That's always been true if some big stress happens in your life. Well, everybody is experiencing life stressors now all the time because we're not built to deal with a tremendous amount of rapid change. If we were built to deal with that in previous times, you probably would have gone crazy, right?
Right.
With the how static things were.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, you add to that the not only the politics and the media is constantly trying to stress you to get you to click. And then, and I think this is underrated, and I'm trying to remind myself on a near daily basis, that downtime when you're bored. You're not staring at your phone. You're not flipping through articles. Well, I'll let scholars speak.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that does come up here. Stress negatively affects our attention span and sleep, which also impacts memory. Chronic stress can damage the brain. But we're also doing other things, which neuroscientists say makes it even harder to encode memories in the first place because of the way we scroll through our phones and take information at such a pace and never take a break from it. So we're exacerbating the problem that exists. I hate to use the term perfect storm, but I don't know what is better. A bunch of things conveniently came together at the same time that are all negative. And they probably reinforce each other. Things are happening at a faster pace because of social media and all that sort of thing. But the fact that we never stop and let our brains slow down at a time when things are changing so fast, oh, my God, it's a layered on top of things. It's like you started eating more cake and stopped exercising at the same time.
Yeah. Well, the best description I ever read, and it was a while back, so forgive me if it's a little vague, but of what we do in our downtime when you're bored or when you're asleep or whatever, what your brain does is it files things, it labels them, it finds relationships, kind of cross-tabs them, and cross-references stuff, and puts it in an order that you can access. It does its filing. And we never do any filing. So our brains are giant stacks of unrelated documents piled up on a desk or on a kitchen counter. We never take the time to file.
This seems to be fairly well agreed upon, what you just said. Mm-hmm. Why aren't there PSAs on the radio station or the TV or billboard saying, carve out some time where you don't stare at your phone today? That might be the best thing we can do for society.
The single best thing. It might be, indeed.
I know I need to do better. I need to do way better of getting my kids to where, okay, we're going to do something that's got not looking at screens, no music playing, just no TV on in the background. Just got to find something to do. And they always look at me with tremendous fear. As soon as I break into the, kind of like I feel like if I'm standing in line Starbucks and I know it's going to be an entire 45 seconds before I get my coffee and I realize I don't have my phone with me. Oh, my God. I've got 45 seconds to kill and I don't have my phone.
What All right, is calm, that weird calm feeling down. Of dread?
Calm down now. Calm down. You're going to be okay. Stare at that guy over there. He's got kind of funny clothes on. Maybe you can think about that for a second.
Wow, that's how would you describe that emotion? It's almost that of a junkie who realizes, oh my God, I forgot my drug.
I don't know. I've never been a junkie, but it's weird. It didn't exist. It didn't exist in my own brain not that many years ago. If I was in line at the grocery store, I was just in line and I'm just going to wait. I didn't think, I don't have my phone. I can't check and see if anybody texted me after any news headlines or a sports score or something.
Now, you might get a little impatient till you get up close enough to the tabloids to read Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman in breakup drama. Yeah. Thinking, wow, I didn't hear they'd broken up. And you read it and then pick it up, flip through it, then put it back because you're not going to be seen spending your money on that garbage, but you're kind of curious.
Kanye West reveals cancer diagnosis to family.
Yeah.
Something else that didn't happen. I don't know. Okay. Well, I'm glad I did this segment just to remind myself. I've become friends with somebody who's like a brain expert, PhD brain expert person. And I've been asking him, I'm going to ask him about this. How important do you all think this is? It's got to be right up there at the very top of importance. Unless, though, maybe the other side of it is, look, this is the new world. This is what brains are going to be. Adapt or fall behind.
Yeah, I don't know.
No?
Adapt by going crazy?
Yeah.
That by not being able to remember anything and being stressed
point.
And please, depression, anxiety, suicide, it's all up.
Good counterpoint.
Armstrong and Getty.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
See new things. Try new things. Go back centuries while living in the moment. Forge new paths while discovering old ones. Pedal, paddle, and paint while trekking, tasting, and tailoring experiences that transform you into a better version of yourself. Immerse yourself in the world by activating your mind, your heart, and your body on a river cruise exclusively from Avalon Waterways. Save with limited time offers at avalonwaterways.com. Avalon is cruising. Elevated.